Hello, 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 and welcome to episode 3 of the A113 Animation Podcast. Today we're going to be discussing Monsters University, Pacific Rim, and some recent news. I'm your host, William Jardine, and joining me again this week after his absence for our epic episode is France's finest, it's Damien.
Hello.
And we are absent a Mania this week because he's busy, but in his place, also from A113 Animation, we've got our live-action Disney writer, it's Nadine. Hi, Nadine.
Hi.
And we were going to have our Studio Ghibli correspondent as well, Myra, but she's busy, so she will be in for our Despicable Me 2 episode, which will be some point next month. So it's just us three today. Well, first things first, on the podcast in the last two episodes, we have been griping a lot about the lack of Frozen advertising. So it's a very good thing then that since then we have had not only the first teaser trailer for Frozen, but a couple of international trailers as well. Did you two both get the chance to see these?
Yes.
Yeah, I watched them when they came out. I was quite excited, actually.
Yeah, I thought the teaser was fun, but it just felt a little, you know, a slight after we've waited so long for anything to just get like this comic little teaser.
Yes, exactly. After a long wait, we could have a better trailer.
Yeah, one would have thought so, but Jennifer Lee, the co-director of the film, who was the screenwriter for Wreck-It Ralph, did say, in fairness, that this was really just to get people, give them an indication of what to expect and that there's bigger and better things to come. And since then, we have got a Japanese trailer for the film, and, Damien, more useful for you, a French one, which have looked really epic.
Yes, the trailer is way better. It's very exciting. And I have a translation of the French trailer. If you want, I can...
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
It's the end in English.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some guy who says, "This is the Queen Elsa." Then we hear Elsa say, "Leave me, don't come closer." Anna screams, "Elsa!" Then there's some guy who says, "The Queen has cast a bad spell on her land." Then Anna says, "I have to find her." Another guy says, "Your magic is full of beauty, but you have to learn how to control it." And then at the end, Christoph says, "We've got to try surviving this blizzard." And then Anna responds, "It's not the blizzard, it's my sister."
Ooh, goosebumps. Goosebumps.
I'm quite excited about that. I think seeing her, the princess, I think is going to be pretty exciting. Like, will she be like an extra princess on the Disney ones or queen? Because I think that's quite interesting to see her. She's different. Like, the animation's different to what we've seen princesses before, I think.
Yeah, it does look very visually kind of unique. I mean, early on, everyone was kind of saying, oh, it just looks like Tangled, but Frozen. Frozen in the sense that it's cold and stuff, not in the sense that the film's called Frozen. And it does, in a way, look a bit like Tangled, but the more we see, and we see, like, these big, crazy snowmen and everything and all this magic, it looks very visually unique, I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it looks interesting. See if it works.
Okay, and then, because we do these podcasts so few and far between, we're really just doing the highlights of the news, and because in the last month we have got a lot of animated trailers, we're just going to run through some of the cool ones of them. And the next one on that list is for the Lego Movie, which is being directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who directed Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, the first film, that is. And 21 Jump Street, the live-action comedy with Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum in. And actually, I've been a little skeptical about the film because it sounds a little goofy, but with the cast it's assembled, with people like Chris Pratt and people like Will Arnett, and with these directors, it looks like a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. It looks like a very good funny movie.
It's the whole Lego Movie. Everyone thinks, oh no, that's just, who wants a Lego Movie? But you see that, and it's actually going to be the cast they've got together, and obviously the directors. It's going to be, they're taking this seriously. It's not going to be anything, it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, and we heard out of Comic-Con yesterday, because we're recording this, I think it's the last day of Comic-Con today, actually. We heard yesterday that Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill, as we said, both worked with the directors on 21 Jump Street, are joining the cast as Lego Superman and Lego Green Lantern, respectively. And Kobe Smulders, who was Robin in How I Met Your Mother and was Agent Something or Other, the annoying one in The Avengers, is going to be Lego Wonder Woman. And, like I say, Will Arnett out of Arrested Development is Lego Batman. So ahead of the live action Superman and Batman film Warner Brothers are bringing out in 2015, we're going to have an entire Lego Justice League in the Lego movie next year.
I like that. any Justice League movie, I'm happy with.
Well, providing it's not a crap movie, of course.
Lego form will probably be better than a human form.
Yeah. Now, isn't that the sad truth? And the animation is very interesting as well, because we haven't really... It's been said that it was CG, but it looks far too realistic, from a personal perspective anyway, to believe that it's not stop motion. And... I heard someone suggest that maybe Warner Brothers are lying and pretending it's not stop motion to try and avoid the financial pitfall where all stop motion films seem to tank. But apparently it was announced at Comic Con yesterday that it's a mix of the two.
It looks all CG to me, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, regardless of which it actually is, it certainly looks very interesting. And it looks different to traditional animated movies, which in itself is something that we should be happy about.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it's going to be something exciting and different, I think. Like, as different as an animation film can be. Like, Lego, we haven't seen this, but, well, since probably all TV movies, maybe, are the exception. this looks like it's going to be pretty big, and like, it's going to be a family thing as well. I reckon it's not just going to be kids or teenagers. I reckon it's going to be something adults want, because Lego's such a universal and such a family thing. I think this is going to be really fun.
Yeah, and I'd agree. Now, something I'm not quite as sold on is something which actually out now in the States, but we don't get it over here until October, and I don't know about you guys in France, Damien, but is DreamWorks Turbo.
Yes, it's probably October 2020.
American companies just do not like Europe, do they?
Yes.
It looks alright. Funny, I guess. Quite very pretty, but it looks too much for me. Like, I mean... I don't think there's that much of cars in it other than the fact that it's racing, but there looks like a hell of a lot of Ratatouille in it. With the disapproving brother, the kind of layabout useless human who looks after the gifted animal creature thing that has powers and whatnot. It's getting alright reviews, but I'm not really sold on it, and I'm not particularly pleased about anything.
Yeah, me neither.
No, nothing about it kind of screams that it looks very good. I think DreamWorks, the last few films of DreamWorks have been really good. I think, I don't know what's happened. They've just kind of taken ideas from different things.
They've been so kind of daring and exciting in recent years that this seems kind of like a regression. I mean, I haven't seen the film, so I don't want to cast doubt upon its quality, but this seems more like pre-Kung Fu Panda DreamWorks. This seems like something you get around the Shark Tale time than when you've got the kin of Kung Fu Panda 2 and Rise of the Guardians and that kind of stuff out at the moment.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It doesn't... Nothing about it looks very modern. It just looks something... It would work back in early 2000. It doesn't seem to work now, but obviously I haven't seen it.
Yeah, we're all... I hope the director isn't listening to this, because he might be a little hurt that we're all just assuming his movie sucks.
I do want to see it, though. You never know. It could surprise us. DreamWorks has been good recently, so...
That's a point. DreamWorks haven't disappointed me in a long, long time, but I think I will probably swerve it just on the fact that it's going to be so far in the future. I mean, it's the reason I didn't watch Madagascar 3 last year. By the time it eventually arrived here, I had no interest in seeing it.
Sure, Madagascar's quite good.
Oh, I'll give it a shot eventually.
Yeah, try, but I don't know. Just doesn't look nothing new about it. Not anything that's exciting. So many different things out this year. It's not on the high priority list.
And another film I'm saying is a little, perhaps less original by virtue of only that it's a sequel, is Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2, which is coming from Sony Pictures Animation in September, I think, and there was another trailer released for that. What are we thinking of this one, guys? Going to see it? Going to give it a miss? How do we like the first film?
I like the first film. I may see this one. I think I have a better chance of seeing this one than Turbo.
Yeah,
I agree there as well. This looks much more interesting. I like the first one. I was surprised by it. I didn't expect much. I laughed a lot, and I liked it. I thought the animation was cool. It was, and the voices were really good, and I liked the story. It's silly, and this looks even sillier.
This looks kind of like a silly, cartoony Jurassic Park in a way, where you got all these kind of foodimals, I think they're called, and you've got all the punny ones. I love the joke in the trailer that they keep throwing out, which I'm probably not going to laugh at in the actual film, because I've seen it so many times, where they say, "Oh, there's a leak in the boat." And then there's like a little leak standing there like, "Ah!"
The leak in the boat was definitely all pitched up crying at that. That was hilarious. Really good. I think I like the puns, and I like the monkey. I can't remember what his name is or anything.
Oh, the monkey voiced by Neil Patrick Harris.
Fantastic. The best part of it.
Steve, is it? Steve? I want to say Steve. Yeah. But yeah, I think the film looks pretty damn good, actually. I mean, it's not directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller. It's directed by, I think, Cody Cameron and Chris Pearn, something like that, who both worked on the first film in one capacity or another. And it looks pretty interesting. It looks fun. It looks funny. It's got a lot of the same voice cast, although Mr. T is no longer voicing Earl the policeman. He's been replaced by Terry Crews, doing an Iron Man thing there, I guess, where they replace What's-His-Face with Don Cheadle. I don't know. It should be fun. Should be good. And I will definitely be checking that one out, whereas Turbo is a little hazier. And the next film on the agenda, which was we were very surprised, actually, to see a trailer for this, was The Box Trolls, which is the third feature film from Laika, I'm not sure how you say that, who made Coraline and Paranorman. This one is about the titular Box Trolls, who are kind of these little monsters that live in the sewer of this Victorian town. And they adopt or look after this abandoned orphan human boy. The trailer won the film a lot of fans with this kind of acceptant moral that it had, where it's like, families come in all shapes and sizes. Sometimes there's a father, sometimes there's a mother, sometimes there's two fathers, sometimes there's two mothers, sometimes there's weird uncles who like to smell cheese, and all this. So it was kind of a more accepting, universal kind of message than we're used to seeing in mainstream animated films.
I like that. I think that's a it's good. It's not conforming to just like normal films. It's being a bit more daring and not daring. It doesn't have to be daring, but it kind of is still a bit daring. Like, kids go and see this. It'll be very good for them to kind of accept that. Whether or not that's actually in the story, I'm not sure.
Mm. Damien, I know you're a big fan of stop motion. How are you liking the Box Trolls so far?
I think it looks amazing. I love the Coraline and the Paranormal, so this one I'm sure I'm gonna see.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. Whereas Turbo's hazy, whereas Cloudy's probably yes, the Box Trolls is a definite. This, if it wasn't for how bloody exciting 2014 is for animation, this would easily be the best and the most anticipated animated film for me. But then you've got stuff like The Good Dinosaur, and you've got stuff like Big Hero 6, and we've got stuff like The Lego Movie, and it's gonna be. And How to Train Your Dragon 2 as well, which we'll get onto in a second. It's just going to be such a big year for animation.
Yes.
Am I the only one who thinks the Box Trolls looks a little lighter than Laika's previous stuff?
Yes, I don't think it's lighter. Again, it's just a teaser, so...
Yeah, well, I suppose, fair point. But it just doesn't seem as kind of like spooky as the Paranorman teaser was, or as Coraline, the actual film was. It seems like it's going to be a little more quirky and a little more Aardman-y than... Perhaps spooky and Tim Burton-y.
I think it looks freaky. But I'm always freaked out by trailers. I still haven't seen Paranorman, but that trailer freaked me out, and I really want to see it still. And Coraline freaked me out, and I think this looks pretty scary. But in a good way, not like scary, but me scary. But,
yeah. Not like Saw.
No, not like that scary. It's weird, but good. I like it, the anime. It's very good. It reminds me of the Bones type thing. Them going around, and just have that kind of vibe.
I think Damien would definitely agree with me when I say you should definitely see Paranorman as soon as you can.
Yes.
Definitely want the Blu-ray, I think.
Oh, yeah. It looks absolutely phenomenal on Blu-ray. Although I had a strange thing with my Blu-ray. I got the 3D Blu-ray pack. And normally you get a normal Blu-ray and a 3D Blu-ray. But this was both on one disc, which was strange. And then when I put it in, it was normally fine. But towards the end of the film, the sound kept going out of sync. And it was odd.
I'll make sure I don't get that DVD then.
Yeah, get the normal Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Okay, the next trailer isn't particularly an animated film, and in fact, Nadine, this came under your jurisdiction, is for Saving Mr. Banks, which is the true life story of, or how true it'll be in the film, I don't know. It's based on the true life story of how Walt Disney acquired the film rights to Mary Poppins from author P.L. Travers. Walt Disney is played by Tom Hanks, P.L. Travers is played by Emma Thompson, both Oscar winners, both have voice characters in Pixar films, actually. Hanks as Woody and Thompson as Queen Eleanor in Brave. How are we liking this film so far?
It looks good. I think it looks very entertaining, interesting, and I have nothing much more to add.
I really like the look of this, and I just didn't know about it. I don't know where I've been for the last.
You do seem to be the only person that doesn't know about it.
This is just not on my radar. I just heard it. I was like, oh, a film about Disney. This is what I've been dreaming of for years. I think it looks really good. I like, it's obviously just Christmas family movie, near Oscar season, it's everything you'd expect. It's very interesting. Like you say, though, how close they're going to be to the actual events, I don't know.
Well, it's not going to be Christmas when we get it, is it? It's going to be sometime in 2014.
Probably is.
That's true. That'll be our month to catch up with all your films.
But yeah, I think it's really good to see Walt Disney kind of portrayed on... It seems strange that this is the first time Walt Disney's been portrayed on screen. I mean, Tom Hanks, I read someone on Cartoon Brew say, it looks good, but Tom Hanks doesn't seem to be playing Walt Disney so much as he seems to be playing Tom Hanks with a mustache. Which... But it's Tom Hanks, one of the greatest actors of our time, so I think it's going to be moving, it's going to be entertaining, it's going to be a good portrayal, even whether or not he particularly resembles Walt Disney, which, to be fair, he doesn't.
And that's definitely true. He doesn't look anything like Walt Disney. But it's fair. The fun, the loving with Disney, I assume I never met the guy. It kind of looks like
I think if they're ever going to do a Walt Disney biopic, Ryan Gosling or Jean Dujardin, although he's French, so that'd be a bit tricky, both look very much like a young Walt Disney, so that'd be maybe the way to go for a young Walt.
I think you should kickstart that idea. I'm up for it.
Yeah, I don't think the money would be much use in my hands, and I believe it or not, I don't actually have Ryan Gosling's phone number, but I could give it a shot.
He'd be up for it. He was in the Mickey Mouse Club. Done.
Yeah, that means he has to play Walt Disney.
Yeah, he has to. There's a connection there, and we will get to it.
Okay, so the next trailer we're discussing is How to Train Your Dragon 2, which was another one we weren't really expecting to see. And this was, I think we can all agree, one of the best teasers in the purest sense of the word, because this wasn't some rapid cut, quick montage of loads of scenes from the movie. This was one continuous sequence of Toothless flying through the air with Hiccup on his back. And then Hiccup jumps off and opens out his arms, and he's got like these little wing things, and he's gliding, and it's just, oh, goosebumps everywhere. And it looks incredibly exciting and intense and epic. And I sincerely hope you both agree with that.
Yes, I agree. I'm very excited for this one. And the teaser is perfect for me.
Yeah, it just looks amazing. I'm jealous of American. Turbo, I think they got the teaser before the film at cinemas, and that would be amazing just to see like a big screen, I think.
Can you imagine it in IMAX? That would be, like, mind-blowing.
I might just cry with it. It just looks amazing. I don't know whether or not that's going to be in the film, but I like the fact that, I like teasers like that show us just, we don't know anything that happens in the film. We just know that it's going to come, and know that they're both still in it, that kind of thing. It feels like How to Train Your Dragon, which is a good thing. It doesn't feel much different about what the story's about.
Yeah, this doesn't feel like a forced continuation like a bunch of the Shrek films did. Oh, I hate the Shrek films after Shrek 2. This feels like a... I mean, I was sceptical about a sequel, but this feels like a natural continuation. We got Dean DeBleur, I'm not really sure how to say it, who co-directed the first film with Chris Sanders. Chris Sanders moved off, obviously, to direct The Cruise, which we kind of liked, kind of didn't love. And Dean DeBleur is directing this on his own. Which I think will be nice to rack him up some solo cred after he's worked with Chris Sanders on this and on Lilo and Stitch.
Definitely, it's a good one to do, How to Train Your Dragon.
Mm. Okay, and this isn't trailer related, but Disney didn't reveal. Blue Sky Disney, the website, which is always very, very accurate with Disney tips. They were the first people to tell us about Big Hero 6, long before Deadline or anyone else like that did. They leaked details about Disney's upcoming slate post Big Hero 6. We've got, well, firstly, after Big Hero 6 in 2014, we have got from Tangled and Bog co-director Byron Howard, Zootopia, which is the animal comedy we heard about Jason Bateman, who's apparently playing a fox in it. And that's coming in 2016 on the 4th of April, we think, matching this up to the previously released release dates. Then, the other Tangled co-director, Nathan Greeno, who was apparently working on Zootopia before moving on to his own project, will be working on another fairy tale-ish film called Giants. Maybe based on Jack and the Beanstalk, something like that. That'll be the second film of 2016 on 23rd of November. Then, the studio's missing 2017 because we've got two Pixar films coming that year. Disney will then have films in 2018, the first one of which is the next film from Ron Clements and John Musker, who directed The Little Mermaid and Aladdin and The Great Mouse Detective and Treasure Planet. This was rumoured to be kind of Pacific-y and tiki tale, and It is called Moana, apparently, and it's a Polynesian tale involving the island folk and idols made famous the world over. And apparently, it's likely it's going to be a CG hybrid thingy like Paper Man was, and that's on the 8th of March 2018. And then we got a film from Dean Wellen, who's a Disney guy as well, first-time director, who is directing a teenage space race animated film, which will be late 2018. We've no more details about that, but that's an exciting site, isn't it, guys?
Yes, maybe we don't have enough information to be really excited, but this sounds interesting.
It's just nice to know that these films are being made. I like the fact that we're in the loop still. We know what's happening. Just knowing that Disney are carrying on is kind of a nice feeling. They're not just focusing on Pixar still. They are trying to keep up this animation thing.
Yeah. It'll be nice to hear some more about Pixar's upcoming site in the next few weeks, hopefully at D23 as well. But for me, I'm really excited for Zootopia because, well, Jason Bateman's awesome. And it's got Byron Howard, who did a fantastic job with Bolt and with Tangled.
Has Jason Bateman done voice work before?
I don't think so. I looked on his Wikipedia page and I'm sure he'd done some crappy director video animated film once, but I think that was it. This is his first, to my knowledge, major voiceover role.
He has a very funny voice. Obviously, Arrested Development is just funny anyway, but he does have quite the timing with it. Yeah, I think it'll be very good.
Yeah, and I'd agree. I'm excited for pretty much everything there, but like I say, Zootopia for me has got to be the top one, although Ron and John's film is obviously going to be great. And now let's just give one quick mention before we move on to our other stuff to one bit of exciting news that came out of Comic-Con just last night, which is The Avengers 2 is in fact not going to be called The Avengers 2. Joss Whedon, fanboy king of all, came out on stage and revealed that it's going to be called Avengers Age of Ultron, revolving around Ultron. What do we think of this?
Sorry, I'm very excited. The fact that Whedon can let this come on and tell you something so, obviously it's a big thing having a new title, but just he can just tell you that and everyone's going mad, and it's just knowing that he's so into this deal that he's working it right now, just really excited, and it just has a new spin on it. Whether or not the UK title will be the same, that's...
After the horrific Avengers Assemble.
Age of Ultron. Avengers Assemble, I think is what it's going
to
be.
Avengers Assemble around to fight the Age of Ultron or something horrible like that. What was the film? What was the Avengers called in France, Damien? Because
it was just the Avengers.
Oh, it's not often that you guys get better titles than we do.
Yeah, the title for Frozen is the Snow Queen, literally.
Yeah, I thought.
I think it's better.
Yeah, that's a. I mean, normally you guys get the world of something or other, don't you? Like the world of Nemo, the world of Ralph.
Yes. The world of Oz.
It's the world of the Avengers, the world of Ultron. Okay, I think that'll just about wrap us up on the news. So this isn't animation related, really, at all. But we're going to discuss now Pacific Rim. Why? Because it's awesome.
We always thought alien life would come from the stars. But it came from deep beneath the Pacific. Kaiju made land in San Francisco. The second attack hit Manila. And then the third one hit Cabo. And then we learned this was not gonna stop. In order to fight monsters, we created monsters of our own. We needed a new weapon. The Jaeger program was born. Two pilots, our minds, our memories, connected. And man and machine become one.
That are at our door. apocalypse!
But it is pretty cool.
Pacific Rim.
Okay, so have we all seen Pacific Rim?
Yes, and it was amazing.
Yes, it was very good. I didn't think it was perfect, but it was probably the best film of the year for me.
Yeah, that's kind of sad, isn't it? It was good, it wasn't brilliant, but it was by far the best film of the year. Yeah, I thought it was very fun. If only just because it craps all over Transformers.
Definitely, it just feels so good. Like, I gave up with Transformers, didn't like it, and this just feels like it's a new thing. I hope they make sequels to this just so it can poo more over Transformers. That'll be amazing.
What I really liked about Pacific Rim over something like Transformers was this was not a cynical, depressing, dark summer blockbuster. Plus, Transformers is, you know, offensive to pretty much everyone. It's racist, it's sexist, and all that. Pacific Rim was a multi-diverse film. You had Idris Elba in there, you had Asian actors in there, you had, although oddly, only really one female actress, which was a little underwhelming, given that she was such a good character. It's like Del Toro's like, well, we've got one badass female in there, that'll be enough to pacify the women, won't it?
That's the one big problem I have with that. Just, where's all the females? Just, you know, we have one really, like, strong one, but is there no one else, like, behind the scenes female? There was more monsters that were female, weren't there?
There's a pregnant kaiju, but there's more female monsters than there are female humans. And what I really liked about it as well is all the action was very, very good. It was compared to, like, if you compare it to something like Iron Man 3, where the action went on indefinitely, or Man of Steel, where the action just was repetitive, you had three really big set pieces in this film. They were all different and escalated from the last. They were all exciting, they were all interesting, but they weren't really homogenous, they weren't the same, and they were all really, really good.
Yes, definitely. And for Man of Steel, I didn't want any more action, I was tired of it. And for this, for Pacific Rim, I wanted more.
Definitely, I think they will. Like you said, so different. And there was, like, more emotion in there, like, you know, not giving anything away, but, you know, not everyone survives, all this type of thing, you know. It's as realistic as monsters versus, like, robots can be in a weird sense.
Yeah, this is as good as monster giant robots versus giant aliens gets, people. Plus, it had an awesome cast as well. Idris Elba is, well, he's Idris Elba. What else is there to say? He's amazing. He's fantastic. Charlie Day was very fun. Ron Perlman was Ron Perlman-y good.
Yeah, I like the cast. Charlie, main guy, Hunnan?
Charlie Hunnan?
I've only seen a few of his films, but I really liked him. I thought he was very good. Cheesy lines, but...
Oh, yes. The script was incredibly kind of cheesy and cliched, as was the characters, but that was one of the best things of the film for me, because it played off these cliches. Like, for instance, I'm trying not to give too much away, but at the end of the film, you would expect the male character and the female character to kind of kiss, and like, there's helicopters go overhead, and you'd expect them to let off fireworks, and they'll be all happy and successful, like, yay! And then they're embracing and everything, but that's not the way they go. Just because there's a male character and there's a female character doesn't mean they have to be an item. And I liked, it was a refreshing change not to just have the female character be kind of like what Megan Fox is in Transformers, where she's just eye candy.
Definitely, and it was him. She was obviously not giving too much away, but she was his perfect match inside, like, the robots. And he was the one who said, we need her. It wasn't her. No one else noticed her but him. And I thought that was more meaningful than him just being really good looking and her going, oh, he's so nice. It was, no, I want you. You should do this. You're perfect for it, kind of thing. That makes sense?
Yeah. So, did we have favourite characters in the film?
For me, it was the one played by Idris Elba. Just because the acting was so good.
I'm on a Charlie Day hype at the moment, so it was amazing and so funny.
See, I'm going to have to land, like, directly in between you, because I can't really pick between them. I really like the line Idris Elba says, when Charlie Hunnam's character like grabs him and he's like, "You, hey, listen to me," and Idris Elba goes, "One, don't ever touch me again. Two, don't ever touch me again." But at the same time, I like Charlie Day's line of, he's like, "Yeah, I'm back, you one-eyed bitch." It was just very fun. It was a ridiculously fun film, which was the best thing about it.
That's what summer blockbusters need to be. I think that's what Pacific Rim's done well. It's fun. It's what you go to the cinema for. Fun and entertainment and robots fighting monsters.
Exactly. I mean, I would marry Christopher Nolan if he would let me, but his influence on summer blockbusters has been kind of massive, and everything now is all dark and Nolan-y, and that works well in the Batman films, ridiculously well, but it kind of didn't so much in Man of Steel. Much though I liked Man of Steel, much though I like Henry Cavill's face, it was a little too gritty for Superman, who is essentially the John Cena of superheroes.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I keep saying I definitely agree, but you just said everything. Oh, boy. Man of Steel, it tried to be, it was just too dark. Superman, how I've always seen him, is just fun. He's everything's happy and bright, blue, and everything.
But at least it wasn't as crap as Superman Returns, so that's good.
It's always very good.
Did anyone stay for the post-credits scene?
Yes.
What did you think of it?
I think it was funny. It was more a middle-credits scene than an end-credits scene, but I liked it. It was a fun twist.
Only me and one other person stayed, like a packed cinema. I was like, "What are you doing? Stay!" But I didn't obviously say that. And I thought it was, fun. It's interesting. He was a good character as well, without giving too much away.
Yeah, we don't want to get angry spoiler-related emails.
That doesn't make a spoiler, because I answered who it is. The main characters there. It could be anyone.
Any of the male characters. Yeah, that's a point. There's only one female character, so all we know is it's not her.
Yeah, exactly. It was funny. The line.
Yeah, see, I didn't realise there was one, and I thought maybe there will be an after-credits scene, but people got very pissy with me after I made them wait through 10 minutes of Monsters University credit to see a throwaway gag. So I really didn't have the gall to say, "Hey guys, you want to sit through all the Pacific Rim credits just in case there's an after-credits scene?" Because I was afraid I might have got, punched in the face.
Good thing you might not have, cinema buddies after that to make them wait again. not again!
Yeah, at this rate, I'll be seeing The World's End on my own.
Is there a credit scene in that? I saw it yesterday and I did not stay for one.
Oh no, I would sincerely doubt there'll be an after credit scene for The World's End.
Just all the movies this summer are going to be after credit scenes, so William has no friends at the end.
Well, I'm going to university at the end of the summer anyway. Who needs friends?
I definitely agree. I saw Monsters University and Pacific Rim by myself because I couldn't wait. I was like, no, I'm not waiting for friends. This is...
Okay, guys, that is all we're going to discuss for Pacific Rim. If you want to read more about it, my review of Pacific Rim will be up on moviepilot.com soon. Just a little subtle plug there. But now, we're on to the main focus of the show. Let's discuss Monsters University.
Welcome to the scare floor.
How do I become a scarer?
I'm officially a college student!
Mike Wazowski.
James B. Sullivan.
Like Bill Sullivan?
He's my dad.
I expect big things from you.
I just need to ace my classes, graduate with honors, and become the greatest scarer ever.
Were you kissing my hand?
And what about you with all your shedding?
I don't shed.
Really?
The star player has just arrived.
You're my hero!
Slow down, Squirt!
This is a party for scare students.
I am a scare student.
I mean, for scare students who actually, have a chance.
Just wait, Hotshot. I'm gonna scare circles around you this year. Behold, my brothers of Uzma Kappa!
I'm Art!
Thought you might like to keep a dream journal.
I'm a dance major, and I'm not.
Not exactly the scariest group in the world.
I thought I could show everybody that Mike Wazowski is something special.
Just reach deep down and let the scary out.
Boys! Oh, scary.
Up top.
The whole school is finally going to see what Mike Wazowski can do.
Time to go to work.
Scary feet, scary feet, scary feet. The kid's in the bathroom. Angry poodle. Jazz clown. My Aunt Phyllis. In the morning.
Quiet.
What's so scary about a little old librarian?
I said,
move it, move it!
Hey! I want a piece of that action!
Tentacles and serpent's wings, they...
Can't wait to start scaring with you, brothers!
We're gonna rip you to pieces!
Don't go in there!
Have fun, kids! I'll just be here listening to my tunes.
Okay, first up on the Monsters U agenda, The Blue Umbrella, the short film. Damien, you didn't get to see this, did you?
No. I went two times to see Monsters University, but didn't catch the short once.
What have France got against giving you people short films?
I don't know.
They just don't. They think you get enough of a cinematic experience as it is. You don't need the shorts.
Do you feel as well that people still aren't used to Pixar films having short films? Obviously, I don't talk to people in the cinema, but when I was there, I felt like everyone around me was like, "What's this? What? This is a Monsters Universe." I'm not. It's like, come on, guys! It's been years. Do you not? This is just a thing now.
Yeah, it's like they've never not had short films in front of them.
But is it just me that feels like everyone else around you is always like, "Oh, what's this? I've walked into. I've walked into the wrong film." I'm like, "No, you haven't. It's a short film. This is the way it goes." Sit back and relax.
This has always been the way. Maybe everyone else has just turned up 5 minutes late for Pixar films for the past, like, 16 years.
But I think a group of girls next to me, haven't seemed more confused. So
what? Well, the person I was sat next to seemed very confused because he's like, this is an animation when it came on because the animation is so good and so photorealistic that for the first few seconds you don't think it is animation. It looks like live-action footage.
I definitely thought it wasn't animation, like until you said that. I thought, well, obviously the umbrellas were, I thought it was filmed on real people and that's very pretty.
Yeah, and the music, again, was very good by John Bryan, however you say it, who did the music for Paranorman, which you haven't seen, Nadine, and for Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, with vocals by Sarah Jaffe. I really don't know how to say anybody's names. I'm terrible at this, so apologies to the world. But it was completely infectious. It was I'll maybe play a bit so you don't just have me singing it. The bloody thing isn't on the UK iTunes store.
I loved it. It was very sweet. It was like the Paperman music. I downloaded that, so I want to download this one as well. It just makes you feel happy and so sweet and romantic.
Yeah, but on the actual short film, the big comparison is to Paperman because there are story comparisons, but I felt, in comparison to Paperman in particular, this short film felt very slight, very short. It didn't seem like it accomplished much, and to be honest, it was a little underwhelming, well, I thought, anyway.
I think, I don't know, because The Paperman is a whole day's worth of events in one short film. That felt like a 5 minutes of someone's life, weren't it? It was very quick. That might be it. They did, yeah, Paperman, I could see Paperman as a film. They turned it into a feature-length film and I'd be happy. This, yeah, it was short. It was quick, just, I won't say too much, but, yeah.
I mean, even if you compare it to something like, say, La Luna or Presto, other great Pixar short films, it just didn't feel like really accomplished much, like emotionally or thematically or narratively. I mean, it was good, it was entertaining enough, but I don't know, it was just not as... I mean, half the time with these things, you'll get people say, well, half the time, in recent years, since Cars 2, everyone's like, oh, well, the short film's better than the feature film, like, yeah, whatever. But... I can't see anybody who would say that this is the case with this.
Definitely. This was more, won't be able to describe it as much, but this was more like it was a short film about a feeling instead of an actual narrative.
Yeah, I think that sums it up pretty well. Okay, now let us move on to the actual film so we can bring Damien back in. He's just sitting there stewing that he hasn't seen the film. So the way we do this is the same way we've done it with the Iron Man 3. Is that what we did first? Did we do Iron Man 3? Iron Man 3 and Epic, yeah. Is that we do a spoiler-free section first, and then we do a spoilerific section. Starting with the spoiler-free section now. Monsters University is directed by Dan Scanlon, a first-time feature film director, apart from his a live-action film he directed on his own on a small budget called Tracy. He directed the Pixar short film Mater and the Ghostlight that was on the Cars DVD. Cars 1, that is. And it was produced by Corey Ray. The film is a prequel to the 2001 original Monsters, Inc., which was directed by Pete Docter. Pete Docter and John Lasseter were both heavily involved in the story process. And obviously, as the name suggests, this takes place at university when Mike and Sully, I don't think it's a spoiler to say, don't get along at first. And I definitely don't think it's a spoiler to say that they eventually become friends, given that that's where the first film picks up. The first thing I think we definitely need to praise with this film is that I think it was a very ballsy move, and a very good move on Pixar's behalf, to make a follow-up to the film without Boo.
Yes, it was very bold to the prequel, because we know already where the characters will end up. So it was very difficult to do as a good story.
Yeah, I'd agree there. Like, with the reason the Toy Story sequel worked so well was because characters were still in it. They just added more. This time they've taken away the characters, so it's kind of like a backwards. Obviously, it's a prequel, so obviously it does happen. But yeah, the characters that everyone loved from the first one, not all of them are there again. So it was very, big risk. That was why I wasn't too excited. I kept my expectations low because I was scared, if anything, because obviously Monsters, Inc. is so close to like my heart. It's so one of my favourite ones. So yeah, very big risk, but paid off.
Well, it's a big risk, like you say, just because it's a prequel. Because, I mean, you can count the number of good prequels out there on one hand, really. Rise of the Planet of the Apes, kind of a prequel. It was very good, but it was more really a reboot, kind of. The Star Wars prequels, they're hit or miss. Some of them are good, some aspects are very good, some aspects are very not. The Godfather Part 2 is good, but, like, way down in comparison to The Godfather Part 1. I know not a lot of people do agree with that, but I think that's how I see it anyway. Whereas I think this was a pretty good prequel. Nowhere near the quality of Monsters, Inc., but a very good film nonetheless.
Yes, I agree, very good.
And if we want to talk about the plot a little bit without giving anything away, this is Mike's movie. Sully's movie was Monsters, Inc. That was about him, that was about Boo, but Mike was still kind of the show stealer. So they kind of repositioned this to tell more about Mike. There was a little bit of concern because that was what they did with Cars 2. Which obviously, I mean, I didn't think that was that bad because I never thought Lightning McQueen was a particularly interesting character in the first place. I mean, he has a bit more of a clearly defined journey, but he was always a bit of a douchemobile. I never really liked him, but I did like Sully, so it was a bit of contention how this was going to turn out. But I think Mike's journey here is more emotionally rewarding, as we'll get into in the spoiler section, than Sully's was in the first film. And it actually deepens Monsters, Inc. It gives more vindication at the end of Monsters, Inc. to Mike.
Have either of you watched Monsters, Inc. since Monsters University? I keep meaning to, because I reckon it will change the way you see Monsters, Inc. now. Because of the fact that Mike's little journey to it was very personal to him, obviously. It's very, like, sweet. And I don't know, it changes your expectation of him? Or no, not your expectation, like your view of him. Because Mike's always been just the funny, cheeky one, the vain one. And now you kind of look at him different.
I haven't watched it, but I do mean to. I meant to watch it before I went in to see Monsters University as well, but I only saw it a few months ago, so I thought I could probably live without. But I really do want to, because, like you say, I think it just changes your perception of the film slightly. Mike was always kind of like, yeah, the comic relief character. He had these levels to him because he's a Pixar character, so of course he does. But he was kind of the lesser. He wasn't the emotional one. He wasn't the one you were meant to connect with so much as Sully was and as Boo was. Whereas now, there's like this whole other layer to him, whereas in this film, you can really connect with Mike, and Sully's kind of the one you're chuckling at a bit.
Yes, I took notes when I watch Monsters, Inc. back with the whole Sully thing, because he was, without the game giving too much away, but the reason Mike and Sully don't get on is because Sully is not the nicest of characters in this. So it'll be interesting to see how Monsters, Inc., like, again, views change on him, because, yeah, Monsters, Inc., he's the emotional one that you connect with the whole Boo situation, but this time around, yeah, it was Mike. It's nice. I like the way, I think this is how Pixar, obviously they always get things right, but that's why Monsters University has worked. They picked the good story. They didn't just make it about them and try and just carry on the story or just do it up until how they got into, like, Scare. And they kind of showed, obviously, you've seen in the trailer, Mike's young. You see that little bit of him as a kid. So, yeah, very more personal and lovely.
I mean, a lot of people have been going out saying, oh, this is the best Pixar film since Toy Story 3. Brave and Cars 2 were shaky. This is Pixar back to their great self. But I wasn't as overjoyed with Monsters University as I wanted it to be, for reasons we'll get onto more in a bit. It just felt like it lacked a little extra oomph. It was very good, it was very well written, it was very well accomplished, it had some great twists and turns, but I think, and I know both of you disagree with me on this, as do most people, but I think Brave was the better film out of the two of these.
I think there's something about Brave. I loved Brave. I could watch it like for days. I really enjoyed it. But this, yeah, there's something about it. Brave wasn't, it was magic in Brave, but this was, yeah, monsters again. I loved it. It was silly in a sense, but you accept it, but the monsters are so human. And that's what I liked again. It felt that, yeah, talking toys, talking monsters, talking bugs, this is what I wanted to get from Pixar. I have to disagree with you there.
Oh well, it had to happen eventually. Damien?
Yes, I prefer Monsters University to Brave 2. I think it was a way funnier, and it has emotional depth. But Brave was good too. But I like Monsters University a bit more.
That's an interesting thought, actually. It kind of pokes holes in the, you know, everyone going, oh, Pixar have gone sequel mad. It kind of pokes holes in their logic when they're all coming out and saying, oh, Monsters University is much better than Brave. To say a prequel is better than an original concept, and that kind of says, fine, then surely Pixar should be making sequels.
That's why I was scared of Monsters University. That's why I'm so excited and nervous of the Finding Nemo sequel, but it's one of the things. They're good at making sequels, so they obviously should keep making sequels, but at the same time, it kind of hurts you a bit, doesn't it, to hear that they're making more sequels. It's not the nicest feeling. But obviously, so far, they seem to be acing it every time.
Yeah, well, I think maybe you could argue they didn't quite ace Cars 2, but I am in the camp that thinks Cars 2 was actually very good, and the very small camp that thinks it was more enjoyable than the first film.
I actually said that with forgetting that Cars 2 existed for a moment. As soon as you said that, I was like, oh, yeah, that exists. I like Cars 2 as well. It's one of my least favourites, but it's not bad at all. It's not as good as the others, is it?
No, and I think that's what a lot of people missed, isn't it? When reviewing Cars 2, when reviewing Brave, and when reviewing Monsters University, you can't say it's a bad film just because it's made by someone who has made very, very good films. It's like Mania wrote an article on the blog a few weeks ago, maybe a week or so ago, actually, saying it's like Disney coming off The Lion King. If you have achieved the most critical, commercial, and creative success you can possibly achieve, then there's nowhere to go but down. Regardless of whether what you make next is a good film, it's not going to be as good a film, particularly coming off Wall-E, Up, Toy Story 3. There is no way in hell Cars 2 was going to top that. And then Brave itself was, I mean, there's kind of this come-down period now, and I think The Good Dinosaur and Inside Out are going to bring that back up again slowly.
You could compare it with, like, many things, like people still, like, don't think that The Dark Knight Rises was as good as The Dark Knight, but that's because The Dark Knight is amazing. But The Dark Knight Rises is still good. You can't kind of base it on what came before it. You've got to still take it as it is. Yeah, but...
Yeah, it's like people do this with everything. They did it with The Hobbit, they did it with The Dark Knight Rises, blah, blah, blah. They just like to complain. We'll be discussing this more on the next show when we review Despicable Me 2, but how did we like this film compared to Despicable Me 2?
I liked Monsters U better than Despicable Me 2. I think the humor on Despicable Me 2 was a bit childish compared to the humor in Monsters University.
So were you not as fond of Despicable Me 2 as the rest of us seem to be, Damien?
No.
Oh, you're crazy.
I liked it the same, but I preferred Despicable Me 2 to Despicable Me 1. Not many people.
I agree with you on that.
I really liked it. But obviously this isn't as good as Monsters, Inc., so it's one of the weird things. So this is, yeah, higher than Despicable Me 2, but Despicable Me 2 is higher than Despicable Me, but Monsters, Inc. is at the top. Like a weird pyramid.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that and say this is... I think Monsters University is a better film, undoubtedly. It's better written, it's got a better crafted story, but I think they're just as fun, and if I was going for sheer enjoyment and sheer hilarity, I would probably watch Despicable Me 2 over Monsters University. Okay, and there's a couple of tiny little tidbits we still need to discuss before we move on to our spoiler section. I really like the opening credits to Monsters University as well. It's kind of, you know, after you've got young Mike at Monsters, Inc., it kind of drives the story forward. It shows Mike growing up to the point where he gets off the bus for Monsters University just after the credits. I thought it kind of harkened back to Monsters, Inc., where you've got kind of the hand-drawn, fun, quirky little opening titles. How do you two like them?
I like them. I thought the opening credits were better in Monsters, Inc., but they were good.
Yeah, I still liked it. Very fun. Yeah, it was like reminiscent of Monsters, Inc., but Monsters, Inc. still kind of aced it with them doors. They're mesmerizing, aren't they, just to watch just the change colour and everything come out of them. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think the film does suffer a bit from the fact that everyone's going, oh, this was fun, but it wasn't quite as fun as it was in Monsters, Inc., because obviously we've been there, done that, kind of, and that's not something we ever really had with the Toy Story films, just because the Toy Story films are brilliant on every conceivable level, all three of them, whereas this was good, not brilliant.
Yeah, that's the problem I have, and I keep comparing it, which I know I shouldn't, but you kind of have to, because they do come together.
How did we like the music in the film as well? It was again done by Randy Newman, who did Monsters, Inc., did the Toy Story films, did the first Cars film, and he did the music here. It's kind of a collegiate one. You've got kind of a cool opening credits song. You've got the marching bandish song over the end credits, and you've got a ravey song by Axwell and Sebastian Ingrosso, is it, out of Swedish House Mafia, doing Raw, which is plays partway through the film. Were we particularly wowed by the music, or did we feel it was a little kind of underwhelming compared to previous Pixar soundtracks?
Well, on my first viewing, I wasn't a big fan, but on my second viewing, I paid attention more to the music, and I like it very much.
Yeah, I think I need to see it again, because I did, obviously the music was good, I just didn't really pay much attention to it this time. I was a bit more into the story, obviously. Unlike Wall-E, where the music just makes it. This was very, it's just what music does,
it's
in the background. I need to watch it again, I think, to really appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think it kind of blends in, and you're kind of aware of it, but you're focusing more on the story than on the music. And another thing that was kind of maybe not the focal point, but was very impressive, was the animation. It's kind of pointless saying a Pixar film looks great, because Pixar films look successively more great by the year, but Monsters University did look great.
Yes, absolutely.
It's one of the things, every year they just keep getting better and better, it doesn't seem to stop. I think, obviously this time it worked more with so many different colours, like all the different monsters of different colours, and it was very vibrant. I didn't get a chance to see it in 3D, but I liked the animation, I thought it was very nice to see it.
Have you read the Art of book yet, Damien?
Yes, I have.
Any good?
Very good.
I've got mine that I still need to read and review, which just haven't had the chance to yet, but it looks good, and well, going off how brilliant the film looks, I would imagine it's very good. And it's got Dice Sasumi as kind of the lighting manager, who also did Toy Story 3. And his work in Toy Story 3 was phenomenal, so I can't wait to have a flick through. Right, let's go on to some characters we like then. Obviously, Mike and Sully were still kind of the main two in the film, but we are also introduced to Uzma Kappa, which is a fraternity of kind of losers, really, in a way. In there, we have Art, voiced by Nadine's best friend, Charlie Day, who's kind of a strange purple sock creature who's a bit of a mystery. We have Don Carlton, voiced by Joel Murray, Bill Murray's brother, who was in the first series of Mad Men as Freddie Rumsum, who was, again, very funny, kind of a bit odd. We had Squishy, who was adorable, voiced by Pete Soane, who voiced Emil in Ratatouille and directed the short film Partly Cloudy, who was cute and a little creepy. And we had Terry and Terry with a Y, Terry with an I. One was a dance major, one was not. Voiced by Dave Foley, who voices Flick in A Bug's Life, and Sean Hayes out of Will and Grace. And all very fun, I think. But for me, it was Art and Squishy that were the top two Uzma Kappa guys. Who did you guys like in the film?
Art and Squishy too. They were the funniest.
I'm awful, because I knew that Charlie Day was in it, but it didn't jump out at me. He was Art for like ages. It was awful. I like Dark though, but I like Terry and Terry. I just thought they were so funny. The fact that they just two different personalities and it's the same thing. Like that bit you said about like the dance major bit, cracking up, amazing. Just, I like Terry and Terry.
I think that's a testament to Pixar and their character creating ability. That there's a lot of like, if you ask people who their favourite characters are in Uzma Kappa, sure you'll get a lot for Art and a lot for Squishy, but you will get almost always somebody saying one for each one of the people in it because they're so likable. Which, for me, was one of the big drawbacks of the film in a way, strange as that sounds, because we don't get any closure on these characters at the end. Obviously, that's difficult because the original film was made 12 years ago, so they can't just stick these characters into that. They're not George Lucas, but the characters just kind of disappear after Monsters University. And the end credits show that they work at Monsters Inc., but we never see them, we never hear from them. So maybe future short films, perhaps?
That's the way to go, future short films. I like that idea, actually. That'd be very good. Yeah, I think it was sad, because it would be very clever if we watch Monsters Inc. again and we see him in the background, but sadly, I don't think that's the case.
That would be ridiculously clever. Pixar had been planning this from 15 years ago when they originally designed the characters for Monsters Inc.
Could happen. I'm going to have to watch it now tonight just to make sure. I don't think it is true, but that's, yeah, I do feel sad that we don't really know that much about them after. But yeah, Toy Story seemed to be working on the short film, so I think, yeah, that would be quite good. You wouldn't necessarily have to have Sully and Mike either in the short film, it's just them.
Yeah. Damien, any thoughts on this?
Yes, maybe they can release Monsters Inc. with the Uzma Kappa cocktails in the background.
Yeah, like the George Lucas thing, like William said, that would be very good.
Yeah, just like at the end of Return of the Jedi, you just see like force ghosts of Art and Squishy and Don and Terry and Terry.
Yeah, they'd just be like plastered like round the room. Just every now and then, you just see them just hop in there. And they wouldn't even have to say anything. Just background, I'd be very happy with that.
Were there any characters we liked outside of the Uzma Kappa group in particular?
Yes, there was the librarian, who was very funny. And the room screamer container teachers.
Oh, yes, Professor Brandywine, or whatever he was called. He's like, yes. A lot of people think being a scream can engineer is a waste of a monster's potential.
I thought that was very Ferris Bueller.
Yeah, I think that was the vibe they were going for.
I loved that. I thought it was very clever.
I liked the jocks. I thought they were, it's all stereotypical greatness, really. They were just horrible, but great at the same time.
I quite liked, what's he called, Johnny Worthington, the big kind of jockey, puffed out chest character voiced by Nathan Fillion, because A, he's voiced by Nathan Fillion, and B, he was a lot of fun. And he was a bit of a douchebag, but I like how they didn't have a traditional villain in the film still.
Yeah, I like that as well. He was just a bully jock, weren't he? He wasn't necessarily there all the time, but he was very underused still, but it worked.
Okay, we ready to go on to our spoilerific thoughts then?
Yes.
Okay, and if you do not want to hear spoilers for Monsters University, if you haven't seen the film yet, to hear our ratings of the film, skip to 1 hour, 15 minutes, and 6 seconds.
Excuse me, spoiler alert!
Right, okay, let's go right back to the start for our spoilerific thoughts. I thought the film opened a bit anticlimactically. I mean, I know, I like Little Mike, he was very cute, and some of the jokes, like, he's like, hey, it's me! Mike, we carpool. I'm your cousin. I thought that was very funny, but I don't know. It felt like some of the voice acting was a little off. I think it was John Krasinski at the US office voiced like the veteran scarer. That didn't do it for me. It just, I don't know. I just wasn't really into the film until kind of the classes started. It just felt like it opened with a bit of a whimper. Am I the only one who felt like this?
Yes.
Oh, okay then.
I liked it. I thought it makes, like we said earlier, it will make Monsters, Inc. Just, like Sully, obviously, he was born into the scary thing. But Mike, obviously, as a kid, it was his dream. And you see the day that he was just like, wow, this is what I want to do. I thought it was really sweet. It was kind of cheesy, but in a good way.
Yes, I agree. I liked the opening. I thought it was very sweet. And interesting to see Mike discover the scarecrow.
Okay, and then we get to Monsters University, the actual university itself, and you think, okay, Mike, your roommate's a scaring major too. Like, oh, okay, it's going to be Sully. And he comes in, and it's Randall looking all villainous and stuff, and then you got the good line from Mike. He's like, hey, take your glasses off. It makes you look cooler, and then you see why Randall's always squinting in the first film. I thought that was a really good swerve by Pixar.
Yes, definitely, and it was a very good job from the marketing department, because from the trailers and the posters, we always thought it would be silly if he's won it.
Yeah, I was surprised too. I like that, because then in all the trailers you see them bunking, Sally and Mike, that's obviously later on, and I thought that was very clever. Because I knew Randall was in it, but he kind of had a bigger part. I kind of, again, it will make Monsters, Inc. different, knowing that they were like roommates. Very, I liked it.
Yeah, they kind of hushed up Randall's kind of importance in the film a bit, didn't they?
I like that this was where their kind of, what's the word, their rocky relationship all started. This is where, like, Randall hated him. It was all started at university. I think I like that. Makes him kind of more evil in the sense that he's been building this up for years. And he takes it to work.
Yeah, because he's got that line, hasn't he? He says after he loses to him in the final scare game test with the scare simulator, he's like, "That's the last time I lose to you, Sullivan."
I like that impression. It sounded like
him. Yeah. I'm usually terrible at impressions. I'm told my Bane one sounds Indian, but but still.
Yeah, I like that. That was good. Yeah, it was good, actually, Randall being. And he was a geeky one as well, which is not anything bad. He was the one that was that wanted to make all the friends with everyone. He's like, "I want to make friends. Like, I've made these cupcakes for everyone." But it's nice to know that he once wanted to be friends with these people. And
yeah, I mean, I know quite a lot of people aren't very happy with kind of how underdeveloped, undercooked Randall's turn to the dark side, as it were, was. And we'll get onto that when we read out some listener correspondence later in the show. But the conclusion I arrive at is, okay, I guess Randall's just a douche then.
Yes, it didn't trouble me. I like that. I thought it was dirty enough anyway.
Yeah, it was definitely a very funny line.
I didn't even think about that. I thought it was more just a kind of fun little, obviously it was more than just a reference to the character in the film, but I thought it was just a reference to them knowing each other for years' time. I didn't think it was much of a big thing.
Yeah, I suppose. And actually, I thought you're saying it's funny because it references the first film, and I think that is a good point. The funniest parts of the film were the ones that I thought were the ones that referenced back to Monsters, Inc. Obviously, you got funny lines like from Art, go, "Oh, I can't go back to jail," and that kind of thing. But like when you see Roz, and she's like, "We will be watching these two with great interest, always watching," and you've got that, and you've got the Abominable Snowman voiced by John Ratzenberger at the very end when Mike and Sully are working in the mailroom. He's like, "Make sure you don't tamper with the mail. That's a good way to get banished." And then you've got Randall's got a Winds of Change poster. So you got everything from big references to little references. I just thought it was really, really funny.
Yes.
Yeah, I like that. There's something about it. I've read an article about it before on the use of references and just how it makes you feel more included and stuff. And I think that's what Monsters University was, the little in-jokes to the other
film. Speaking of little in-jokes and little references, did we catch A113, the Pizza Planet truck, the Luxo ball, and the reference to the Good Dinosaur?
Well, the Luxo ball was very easy to find.
Mm.
It was obvious. I didn't find the Pizza Planet truck the first time.
No, nor did I.
And the A113, I didn't find it either.
I got A113, I was proud of that. It was on. It's on Professor Knight's door when Sully comes in for the first time. I actually turned to one of my friends next to me, like, "Oh my god, look, it's A113! And they looked at me like I just, like, told them I'd gone crazy or something.
That's the best thing about seeing, like, film that is your friend. You're like, "Oh, that bit, they really don't care."
You're like, that bit, like, don't care.
But I only saw the ball, right? Awful, this time around. You have to watch it again, for any excuse to see it again.
Yeah, and I think one of the toys in the Scare Simulator, or one of the Scare Simulators, was a dinosaur, which looks like the one out the Good Dinosaur or something as well.
Yes, I saw several dinosaurs, I think, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, they should have put Rex in there like they did in the bloopers for Monsters, Inc.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
Okay, I think one thing we really need to praise about the movie is it kind of subverts your expectations a lot of times. There are things you expect to happen that don't. Like, you think the build-up is going to be to the final exam, and then they rush through that in a matter of minutes. And you don't expect Mike and Sully to get thrown off their course. And then, like, okay, they're getting on the scare games. The movie's clearly going to end with them winning the scare games. and then Mike gets this big record-breaking scare, and you're just kind of sitting there like, what? Alright, whatever, sure. And then you find out that Sully's cheated, you're like, oh, that's clever, because normally you would expect it just end on this happy ending. And then Mike goes into the human world, and that stuff is all completely out of the blue. And then how they get back in, by scaring the adults and the policemen, and then them getting expelled, all of this stuff, I didn't see any of it coming.
It's one of the things that them winning the scare games actually happened so quickly, but in the moment you don't realise it's so quick, and then you realise, oh, that's because something was up. And then I liked it as well. That's the way films should be, unexpected. I liked it. It was very different. I think it's good because it's obviously not just a kid's film. For kids, they're like, oh, you know, that's a bit shocking. Like, I couldn't believe it when I asked them about it. They're like, no, I didn't know that was going to happen.
But yeah, I like it. One of the main reasons I liked Disney's Wreck-It Ralph last year was because of the big unforeseen twists surrounding Turbo. So I really liked the twists and turns in this. But one thing that kind of I thought was a little strange, at the end, after they've been expelled, Dean Hardscrabble says something like, oh, I wish I could help, or something like that. I mean, I know it would kind of undermine her a bit, but surely she could just let them back on the course.
Maybe it was just too late, or maybe that would totally discredit the university.
I mean, I get that she couldn't really undermine herself, but Shelley is the dean of the university. She has the power to let them back in if she wants.
Yes, maybe. I don't.
Okay. I really like how they got to Monsters, Inc. as well, how they didn't just go the traditional way, though, after they'd been expelled. It was content to, like, say, okay, they can work their way up.
I like that.
It's nice to know that they didn't have to get a degree for it. You know, just because it's your dream doesn't mean you're going to get that easy. You have to work for it. You know, it might not go the way you hope it does, but I thought it was very good. Obviously very Pixar in the end, but not cliched. Yeah, it says like university isn't the be-all and end-all, so it's the two of us who are off to university. Yeah, yeah. Obviously it's for us, but for monsters it doesn't matter.
No, I think it's nice to know that, not the end of the world.
I really like the central moral message of the film, though, as well. I mean, this is Pixar's forte, kind of clever, smart moral messages. You say, like, you're used to hearing from Hollywood, if you put your mind to it, you can do anything, which is a nice message, but it's just not true. No matter how hard I try, I'm never going to be a sportsman of any sort. Like it says, you could try your hardest, you could be the best and most hard-working student on the course, but you can't do anything. You can't be scary if you don't look scary. And I like that it was kind of a brave moral message for a film that is, on the basis of it, a family film.
Yes, I agree. I think that one of the things that makes Pixar a very special studio, you don't expect these kinds of messages from other big films.
Yeah, it's nice to know that, and it's kind of a better message in the sense that, yeah, Mike isn't scary, he can't be a scarer, but he can work with his new best friend in just as good a job kind of thing. He can help him be scary, and he's still doing his dream, just not the position he wanted it, so he's still doing it, just not, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and like we were saying earlier as well, it gives him more vindication for Monsters, Inc. At the end of Monsters, Inc., Mike kind of, he becomes the main man. When he discovers, or they discover together, that laughter is more powerful than scream, and he is living the dream. He's playing to his talents. He's not scary, but he can still be kind of the A-lister, the big guy.
I didn't think about that, and now you said that, it kind of makes the whole film's nicer. It's like one big film, and Mike still gets his dream at the end. I like that.
Yeah, it's a nice kind of two-film story arc. But like I was saying earlier, I don't know, I just kind of felt there was something a bit lacking. I mean, I didn't really expect all too much from Cars 2, so I wasn't really disappointed with that. And I don't want to say I was disappointed with Monsters University. I enjoyed it and I was thoroughly entertained, but there was something, I thought, definitely something missing. Just kind of that extra oomph. Maybe it was because it is a college movie and it has modest aims. It wants to be funny, it wants to be entertaining, it wants to be kind of charming and personal and emotional for what it is, but it's not trying to have like a story where they're fighting a big bad guy or they're saving the world or whatever. But, I don't know, I just kind of felt a little... Did anyone else agree?
Yes, maybe, again, comparing it to Monsters, Inc.,
Yeah.
At the end of the first film, we had a big action sequence with a lot of ladies. And we didn't quite have that this time. We had the Sky Games. We were fun, but it wasn't as big and inventive as the factory sequence in Monsters, Inc.
Definitely. Yeah, missing the door sequence. Obviously not the same door sequence. I don't think anything was as big. It's bad to keep comparing it. But I think even Lost University was quite emotional. I'm not going to say it wasn't at all, because I was very touched by it. It didn't feel whole in a sense. So, yeah, it was definitely missing something. I can't quite put my finger on it.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm not sure what it was missing, but there was something. All the same, I think it would be unfair to say that it's not enjoyable, because it is. It is, I think, the best animated film of 2013 so far, which kind of speaks to, I think, how kind of underwhelming, compared to 2012 anyway, 2013 has been for animation so far. But it was a very good film. It was a very enjoyable film, and I would watch it again in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard to pick up. They keep making, with the exception of a few, they keep making such good films that it's going to be hard every time to say, oh yeah, it's better than the last one, better than the last one. Oh yeah, this is definitely the best one. We can't go like that. But it's a good film. Like you, I'd watch it again right now if I could. I love it. I know that I will watch it tons of times when I've got the DVD. But yes, no way bad. Just some of the other ones I've heard.
Yeah, so how would we rank it then on our kind of top Pixar films list, roughly? I'm not going to ask for exact position. I mean, for me, I think it'd be about 11th-ish. A Bug's Life, Cars and Cars 2 are below it. I think Ratatouille and Finding Nemo just above that, and then Brave just above that. Then Monsters, Inc., then all the other brilliant ones, with Toy Story 2 leading the pack, because that's my favourite film. But where would you two rank it in comparison to other Pixar films?
I would rank it about around the 10th place, ahead of Cars and Cars 2.
Yeah.
The shockingly Toy Story 2 also.
What?
Yes.
What? I'm not having that.
No one expected that, did they?
Controversial.
For me, it's like so much more than both the Cars and Rat. Yeah, I didn't love that much. It's hard. I think one day I'm going to have to miss it all. But so many of them would be tied as well. It's really hard. I loved it. It's just, not as good as the originals. But then again, I feel bad saying that. Love it. It's hard.
Okay, we like it. We all like it. It's good. It's good. One last thing before we rate it. Did we stay for the after credit scene here, all of us?
Yes.
Yeah.
How did we like it?
It was fun. It was funnier than the Turbo trailer.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
I think it was like the Pacific Rim one, just like a little gag.
Yeah, it wasn't like a kind of an Avengers after credit scene. Obviously not the Shawarma one, but the Thanos one. It wasn't like something groundbreaking, like setting up the monster equivalent in the Avengers or something.
I liked it though. I didn't think it was. I thought it was funny, but even that bit in the film with him running to his, well, not running, not even that, getting to his lesson, I didn't laugh at it that much because it was in the trailer.
Yes, but and that actually is a perfect segue for some reader interaction. First, I'm going to read an email we've got from my friend Heather, who emailed into the show when we were discussing Epic. She says that the advert really took all the fun out of the funny bits for her. The hilarity of the joke seen in the adverts was completely underwhelming in their actual film context, because obviously you see the, I can't go back to jail, and the, oh my god, I can't be late to class on my first day, stuff about 30 different times if you watch the adverts for Monsters U. That said, she says, it was enjoyable enough, if a little unsatisfying at the end. And little Mike was adorable. At Pablo RV7, otherwise known as Pablo Ruiz, who writes for the Rotoscopers, and is markable by his massive guy crush on Brad Bird, says, I absolutely loved MU. I loved that the focus was on Mike instead of Sully. He agrees, though, that the Randall resolution disappointed him, but that it was very funny. I think, then, that the general consensus does seem to be that the film was good. It was very good. It was very fun, very funny. Not quite great. So, shall we rate it, then? Okay. I would give Monsters University 8.5 out of 10.
I would give also 8.5 out of 10.
Just to be different, I'd give it an 8 out of 10. So not very different, but...
Way to break the streak, Nadine. Okay, so that's it, folks. There's our ratings for Monsters University. If you have your own ratings or your own comments that you might want to for us to discuss on the next show, please do email them in to contact@a113animation.com. You can find us every day blogging over on a113animation.com. You can find us on Twitter @a113animation, Facebook, facebook.com/a113animation, Google Plus, just search a113animation. You can find us individually on Twitter. You can find me @WilliamKJardine. Damien, where can they find you?
@Archibald_H.
Nadine, where can they hit you up?
@NadineShamrock.
Okay, and if you want to help us out and give us some money, sorry to be so crass about it, you can go to a113animation.com and click on our support page. You can either buy stuff through our Amazon affiliate links. We have a whole bunch of them for everywhere in the world. And everything you buy, we get 5% profit. We get a little bit of money on that, and it helps just kind of give us financial incentive. And obviously hosting the podcast and getting stuff isn't cheap or isn't free. And you can send us a direct donation via PayPal, which again helps us to see as many animated films as possible. You can also sign up for an Audible trial by clicking on the app. We get a small kickback for that as well. Or you can download the Stitcher app and we get money, all money for that as well. Any support is very much appreciated. And it helps for us to see early screenings of films. Nadine, you saw Planes in London last weekend, didn't you?
Yeah, week ago today. Just finishing up the review now.
Do you want to give us a quick thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle?
Thumbs up. It's good, but it's not. It's good for what you expect it to be.
Okay.
It doesn't, like, exceed any expectations.
And once the embargo is lifted on, I think, the 7th of August, did you say?
Yeah, 7th of August.
Well, then you'll be able to see a review of that up on a113animation.com. Until then, we have been your A113animation podcast team reviewing Monsters University. We'll be back next month for a belated review of Despicable Me 2 early next month, and then Planes later in the month. Until then, thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.